Chapter 7. The bus ride was magnificent in its way. Not a radical distance, no more than a small portion of the giant continent, no more than an inch on a one-page map, but it took 6 hours. The view out the window changed so slowly it seemed never to change at all. But even so, the landscape at the end of the journey was very different than at the beginning. Memphis was a slick city, laced with wet streets, boxed in by low buildings painted muted pastel colors, heaving and bustling with furtive, unexplained activity. I got out at the depot and stood a moment in the bright afternoon and listened to the hum and throb of people at work and at play. Then I kept the sun on my right shoulder and walked south and east. First priority was the mouth of a wide road leading out of town, and second priority was something to eat. I found myself in a built-up and insalubrious quarter full of pawn shops and porn shops and bail-bond offices, and I figured getting a ride there would be next to impossible. The same driver that might stop on the open road would never stop in that part of town. So I put my second priority first, and fueled up at a Greasy Spoon Cafe, and resigned myself to a lengthy hike thereafter. I wanted a corner with a road sign, a big green rectangle marked with an arrow and Oxford or Tupelo or Columbus. In my experience, a guy standing under such a sign with his thumb out left no doubt about what he wanted and where he was going. No explanation was required. No need for a driver to stop and ask, which helped a lot. People are bad at saying no face-to-face. Often they just drive on by purely to avoid the possibility. Always better to reduce confusion. I found such a corner and such a sign at the end of a 30-minute walk on the front edge of what I took to be a leafy suburb, which would mean 90% of passing drivers would be respectable matrons returning home, which would mean they would ignore me completely. No suburban matron would stop for a stranger, and no driver, with just a mile more to go, would offer a ride. But to walk on would have been illusory progress, a false economy. Better to waste time standing still than to waste it walking and burning energy. Even with 9 cars out of 10 wafting on by, I figured I would be mobile within an hour. And I was. Less than 20 minutes later, an old pickup truck eased to a stop next to me, and the driver told me he was heading for a lumberyard out past Germantown. It must have been clear that I didn't grasp the local geography, so the guy told me if I rode with him, I would end up outside of the urban tangle with nothing but a straight shot into northeastern Mississippi ahead of me. So I climbed aboard, and another 20 minutes later, I was alone again on the shoulder of a dusty two-lane that headed unambiguously in the direction I wanted to go. A guy in a sagging Buick sedan picked me up, and we crossed the state line together and drove 40 miles east. Then a guy in a stately old Chevy truck took me 20 miles south on a minor road and let me out at what he said was the turn I wanted. By that point, it was late in the afternoon, and the sun was heading for the far horizon, pretty fast. The road ahead was die straight, with low forest on both sides and nothing but darkness in the distance. I figured Carter Crossing straddled that road, perhaps 30 or 40 miles away to the east, which put me close to completing the first part of my mission, which was simply to get there. The second part was to make contact with the local cops, which might be harder. There was no cogent reason for a transient bum to pal up with people in police uniforms. No obvious mechanism either, short of getting arrested, which would start the whole relationship on the wrong foot. But in the event, both objectives were achieved in one fell swoop, because the first eastbound car I saw was a police cruiser heading home. I had my thumb out, and the guy stopped for me. He was a talker, and I was a listener, and within minutes I found out that some of what Garber had told me was wrong.